and bring a buddy.
So stay safe out there.
Because, well, that's hot.
Shout out my name when you pull up outside. Leave more pain behind. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have ignition. We have liftoff. Out and about is a go. All systems are nominal.
Oh, yes, indeed. All systems are nominal. You are listening to Out and About on KYRS, Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Or maybe you're streaming. And you know, if you're streaming, you know where you're streaming from. I'm not going to tell you. Today, we're missing one of our guests because she's sick. Pam is sick today. So Pam, I hope you're listening and I hope you get feeling better. But we've got Eve here back with us in the studio. And hello. I'm going to move this microphone a little bit more. Okay.
Okay.
There we go. And we are going to have a caller in for today's show as well. Well, and so, and hopefully I haven't done this in a few years, done the on-the-air caller thing, so I'm just going to follow the instructions at 10 after 4, and we'll see what happens. I'm very excited. I'm very excited for this. But, Eve, you and I have been involved in a project for what, like now, like a couple months? Or,
yeah.
It's been a while.
I was actually part of the original production way back at the beginning, well, this 2020.
Okay, you were, okay,
yeah.
Of Marilyn's production.
Yes.
So did she use actors from all over the country?
She did. You know, okay. It was in the middle of COVID. So, and by the way, we're talking about Running for My Life, which is a production, but it's actually based on the actual words of women in Congress during January 6th. And it was during COVID, so there was no other way to do it. So Marilyn had this, and she'll talk about it, but she had this great idea and reached out to women she knew all over the place. And we did a live version of it.
What, but over
live
Zoom?
Live streaming. Yeah.
Yeah, over Zoom type thing.
Yeah.
Kind of Brady Bunch looking
thing. It was. And I was Marsha.
Were you Marsha?
Yeah, thank you.
I always wanted to be Alice. Alice always got the big laughs. You know, or Sam the Butcher.
Marsha got the boyfriends.
Yeah, Sam the Butcher. Oh, yeah. Yeah. He was starting a lot of things, so he had money. but, yeah, so that's pretty cool. And so Pam Kingsley had this idea of taking the same thing that Marilyn Langbin had done, and I'm pronouncing it correctly, right?
That's correct.
Langbin?
Yeah.
Okay. And, but make it where local actors, female actors, would take and videotape themselves. You know, I always want to say film, but film, there's no film. And then videotape, it's really, there's no taping. So I guess digitally procure their audio. Yes. Audio and video of them reading the parts of different congresswomen. So we had 19 women all together reading the parts of 19 different congresswomen. And Pam did a real masterful job of taking those and then kind of divvying them up so it moved the story along. So when you're hearing people in the beginning of the piece, they're sort of like, this is the beginning of the rumblings of hearing stuff of the traitorous insurrectionists outside. And then eventually, you know, the fleeing and then kind of the aftermath for themselves personally and for the country. And Pam did such a great job of kind of moving all those around, cutting those up. And then she handed the whole thing in a big cardboard box to me, well, digital cardboard box. And then I took those and put them on, made a movie out of them. And then also a bunch of audio, six different audios, which you're going to hear here on KYRS. And I'm going to talk more about that a little bit later, too, how people can hear that. But that'll be coming up pretty soon. And you'll be able to hear hopefully different episodes on Thursdays and Sundays.
Yeah, it's quite moving. I watched again this afternoon, and it amazes me how, as a society, we've forgotten that trauma of watching it that day.
Yeah.
I watched every second of that and wept.
Yeah. Yeah, it was incredible to see. You know, I was in the Air Force and all that, and sworn to uphold the Constitution and all those things. And I really always had such faith in the electorate that, you know, that they wouldn't send me to go, because I was on a B-52, to go nuke a different country because they knew that the population wasn't crazy. And then seeing the craziness and how susceptible people are to propaganda, to, you know, that people who weren't even... I always kind of thought that maybe there would be a revolution, but it would be led by poor people wanting more or something like that. But it wasn't that. It was people who had good pensions, people who had good jobs. For the most part, it was people who bought into a fiction, who were basically like psychopathic, suicidal psychopathic cosplayers.
I wish I understood it, because I don't think that these people are stupid. I know a few people, not who went, but who were, you know, avid Trump supporters. And I don't know how they could believe it.
Yeah.
I think there's something a little bit fun in feeling like I have inner knowledge.
Yeah.
You know, I know the real scoop. You guys don't really know, but I get it. And even though I'm a toad who slept through high school, I actually have a deep knowledge about what's going on, and I don't understand the government, but I do know that it's messed up.
Yeah.
And they get into that. They become part of this inside group. It's like it's their chance to sit at the cool kids table.
Yeah.
I do think it's like that. And they believe it. They absolutely believe it.
And I think too that it was kind of a perfect storm that during COVID, so many people lost relationships as far as, you know, going into work and talking to their friends. So they went online and they found like-minded people. Yeah. And they're all like-minded people because they live in the same silo of fiction, believing the same crazy stuff, and put themselves as the heroes in their own action movie, you know?
Yeah. Just the most unlikely heroes. I see it here every once in a while. Not too much, but I was in a gas station in Newport, Washington.
Oh yeah,
and there was a woman there with a gun attached to her belt in the store, and I said, "Is there like an extremely high crime rate in Newport that you feel you need to?"
Good for you.
What are the chances that we're going to be here and it gets held up?
Yeah,
I mean, I don't understand.
Did you say?
Well, it's my right. And I said, it is your right. Yeah, I mean, it's your right to wear a toilet on your head.
Yeah, it's your right to poop your pants. In fact, I think they're at a big poop your pants movement, where I'll call it the movement, where people go into like grocery stores.
Oh, that's so funny.
And they poop their pants. And when people go, "Man, you just pooped your pants," they go, "Yeah, it's my right to poop my pants.
And I'm part of the movement.
I'm part of the movement."
Oh, grow up.
That'd be a good T-shirt, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I'm part of the movement.
And then a little,
I thought, too, like, if you could, like, wear Nerf guns when people are open carrying, like, in Target, and just come in, like, kind of standing next to them with your Nerf gun and all
except
that.
Except they would shoot you. I mean, this woman looked at me and tried to intimidate me, but I just decided.
Yeah.
When
I see somebody carrying a gun like that, all they're telling me is they're a very fear-filled person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are times when you have to carry a gun, I'm sure, and there's times when you have people who are, you know, certainly police officers and all that. I mean, I get it, and I have guns, and so...
And there are people who are enthusiasts, and Yeah. That's fine, but why would you wear it to the gas
station? It's a statement to me that you're afraid, that you're just a fearful person.
And a show off.
Yeah. Nice Glock. hey, I'm going to play this first bit, and then Marilyn, maybe she'll call in during that, and then it'll work out really slick as I fumble around. So everybody, this is going to be, and you're going to recognize Eve's voice here as the narrator in the beginning. And then hopefully when we come back, we have a guest on the phone or maybe a smoking board here. We'll see what happens. All right, here we go. This is our first part of the movie Out. I'm sorry, you're not
running
for my life. That's this out and about. Running for my life, Spokane. And you can see this full thing on runningformylifespokane.com.
On January 6th, a mob of Donald Trump supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol, temporarily halting the certification of the legitimate results of the 2020 election. The president, at a rally that day, had encouraged thousands of his supporters to fight and take back our country. In the Capitol, rioters fought with police, smashed windows, and ransacked offices. The insurrection left 140 police officers injured and 5 people dead. Some of the lawmakers recalled texting their loved ones goodbye while crouching behind chairs in the House chamber. Others remembered barricading themselves in offices, while several described running through the hallways towards safety, terrified that they would be killed at every turn. The 19th, an independent newsroom focusing on gender, politics, and policy, reached out to all of the 143 women in the 117th Congress to ask about their experiences on January 6th. Almost 24 United States Congresswomen, all Democrats, shared their points of view, many remembering new details after a month of processing. Here are the stories of these congresswomen as reported by the 19th News. Their words here are spoken by women throughout our community, your friends, your family, your neighbors. They recount what really happened at the Capitol on that fateful day.
Right here, he's punching people. He should still rape you if we get him.
Sarah Jacobs, Democrat, California. I got to the office early that morning, around 7:30 a.m. or 8 a.m. I was excited to see the proceedings and planned to celebrate the previous day's Senate election wins in Georgia with Rep. Nikema Williams. Well, I had seen what was going on in social media, so I was concerned about safety. I was concerned about violence at protests, but I always thought that would stay outside.
Teresa Regia Fernandez, New Mexico Democrat. It was my third day on the job, and I was pretty damn excited. We had 2 Democratic senators joining us from Georgia, as well as certifying the president. My 20-year-old son, youngest of 3 boys, came to work with me that day. He knew it was going to be a long day, and he was excited. He brought a pillow. He wore his suit.
Lizzie Fletcher, Democrat, Texas. That day, I think I had a heightened awareness going in. My husband had come to D.C. with me over the weekend and said he'd stay through Wednesday because it could be a dangerous day. I don't think anyone had a sense of exactly what would happen, but we all got noticed to be there by 9 a.m. and to use the tunnels. I expected to be there until noon the next day, bringing food and a blanket and ready for whatever was going to happen. My husband came with me because my staff was working remotely.
Lois Frankel, Democrat, Florida. I was one of the first members in the gallery. Other members started to come into the gallery and it got quite crowded. I said to myself, ooh, there's too many people in here for COVID. So I decided to leave the gallery, which I'm glad I did. Representative Spanberger, a friend and former CIA official, told me to take off my member pin and tell people I'm a secretary. I thought, really? I went up to a Capitol Police officer on my way out, and she looked at me, and she said, "You're safe. We have you covered."
Norma Torres, Democrat, California. I started to think, what's my plan here? Maybe I should go to the bathroom now, because it might be a long time before I could leave. I took the elevator one floor down. I was feeling anxious and I wanted to calm down. When I went back to the gallery, I saw sergeants in suits running back and forth. I could hear radio traffic. I was a 911 dispatcher for 17 years and I'm trained to listen for keywords, but I couldn't make out anything. Just very, very loud screaming. I could hear the shouting from outside getting louder, and I was ushered quickly back into the gallery.
Brenda Lawrence.
I was in the gallery because I'm from Michigan, one of the contested states, and I wanted to be prepared when it was our turn to debate.
I decided to go to the bathroom, and my daughter called me as I left the chamber. She asked me where I was and if I knew what was going on. I told her I was at the Capitol and didn't. Mom, she says, you need to get out of there. You need to leave right now. Mom, promise me. When I was in the stall, I heard a man screaming, asking, who's in there? I didn't know who it was, so I stayed in the stall and kept quiet. Later, another man came in, identified himself as Capitol Police, and said I had to get out now. I tried to wash my hands, but he practically pushed me out and onto the House floor.
Okay, that was the first segment that we're playing of Running for My Life. And we do have Marilyn on the line. I'm going to attempt to do this thing right here. Let's see, Marilyn, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, there you are.
Marilyn.
Okay. You are on cue. Can you talk to me? Can you say one more thing?
Sure.
Okay, there. Right. I hear you. Welcome, Marilyn. Welcome. It worked.
Great.
Yeah.
Great for technology.
I know. And I've got Eve with me here.
Hi, darling.
Hello, my angel. How are you?
I'm good, my only flower.
Oh.
Isn't that nice? So, Marilyn.
You can just leave us here, maybe.
Well, you know, I just might. I was going to leave Eve just talking as I fumbled around with the buttons, but that didn't happen. Luckily, we had a little lesson here before we went in charade. We did via charades, via our Dana, who runs the shop here. So anyway, hey, welcome, welcome, welcome. Now, Marilyn, how did you get this idea to do Running for My Life?
Oh, my gosh. Well, it started shortly after, I think within 3 or 4 days of the event itself. I happened to catch Patty Murray's interview on the PBS NewsHour, and she was talking about her experience of that day. And, you know, Patty Murray was my senator for a long time because, you know, I'm from Spokane. And I was so struck by how difficult it was for her to describe what happened and how she was trying so hard to hold it together as she was talking about her experience of that day, because it was just literally within less than a week, I think, of the events themselves. And that got me to thinking about the dramatic nature of what everybody that went through that day went through, whether they were on site or they were watching it, you know, from the safety of their own homes. Everybody had a visceral experience of what that day was like. And so then a friend of mine alerted me to this article that appeared in the 19th, which is a nonprofit, nonpartisan website that specifically looks at politics and society through the lens of gender equity and inclusion. And they had gone and reached out to all of the women in Congress for the 117th Congress, 143 women in Congress at that time, and invited them to sit for interviews to talk about their experience. And 23 women
just 23
agreed to be interviewed.
Wow.
And all of them happened to be Democrats. And all of them happened to be House members. So there were no senators and there were no Republicans. Now, since that time, obviously more people have gone on record about what they experienced. But the impetus for this piece was really the dramatic possibilities of just reading aloud the testimony of these women. And so I put it together, you know, got 24 of my nearest and dearest to do it on Zoom about a month after the events in 2021. And it was well received, and people started to, you know, send us information that they so-and-so had wanted to see it and couldn't make it that night. Could we do it again? So we did about a month later. And then it sort of sat fallow for a while. And the first anniversary of the event in 2022 seemed like a prime opportunity to let the story be told one more time. So we did it then. People began to ask when we were ever going to do it in person. And when the COVID restrictions kind of lifted, we started to look at the possibility of doing a live performance. And here we are.
That's such a cool story. And, you know, I didn't do a very good introduction. I just kind of jumped in and decided to ask you questions.
But this is
Marilyn Langbin. And Marilyn, you are originally from Spokane, but now you're the managing director of Bay Area Theater Sports in San Francisco, BATS.
That's right.
You've been a director, a set designer, an actor. You were artistic director of the Contra Costa Civic Theater, and a lot of people probably saw you in the Civic Theater as an actor, I would imagine, in Spokane. And so you directed this first version, and you also just had a live show too.
Right. On Sunday night, we did this live at Fort Mason, which is it's one of two urban national parks in the United States, and it happens to be where BATS Improv Bay Area Theater Sports is located. And so I was able to get that venue for this reading, and got again 24 of my nearest and dearest, and we did it live. And we actually incorporated this time the footage of Patty Murray's interview to launch the event, which was very cool. Yeah,
you know,
Then as part of the process, I also reached out, you know, just sort of in a general way to say, this script is available to anybody who wants to do it. The only caveat is that if you make any money on it, it has to go to a get out the vote campaign.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter to me which one it is, but in order to respect the spirit under which the thing was created in the first place, we want to make sure that it's that we're encouraging people to exercise their right to vote.
Yeah, so. You know, when you were talking, I'm supposed to do 20 minute after the hour stuff, but I just want to hit one thing that you made me think about something when you're talking about the dramatic aspect of it is that, you know, Eve and I were kind of talking about how, it must have been very shocking, and it's kind of revealed in these stories that people can't believe this is happening, or that, you know, it's like a revelation of a character in a play that people didn't know anything about, and they're having to deal with it. And this character would be, I guess, the population of the United States. Is that is that something that kind of came through to you, or was it some other aspect of it?
No, that was definitely it. I remember thinking back to the events of 9/11 and the number of people that said it didn't feel real. It felt like a movie. And looking at what was happening at the Capitol, it didn't feel real. I mean, one of the reasons I think that this piece is so impactful is because it's putting very specific voice to very specific people's experience in a way that we haven't heard explored yet. So when one of the congresswomen says something about it was only her fourth day, she didn't even know how to get out of the building.
Oh, I know.
And one of the most noticeable moments on Sunday night when we did this live was the actress who was reading the part of Sherry Bustos of Illinois, and she's got the speech about getting on the plane to get out of D.C. the next day.
Yeah,
and everybody on the plane was one of the protesters, and the whole audience went, "Oh!" You know, you could just feel them imagine themselves in that situation.
Terrifying.
Yeah, in enemy territory.
Yeah, and I know you got to do 20 after the hour stuff, but I'd love to hear what Eve's experience was of reading that, because I think you were one of the ones that had that kind of revelatory text when we did it the first couple of times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It wasn't that one, but it was the woman who goes home and realizes she's afraid in her own home now.
Yeah.
You know, that now nothing is safe. If that could happen in the Capitol.
Yes. Okay. Well, we're going to do our 20 minute after. And Marilyn, I think I can keep you on. I can hear you. I don't think I can talk to you, though. Because I have to turn off my microphone and when I'm doing this other stuff. So, all right. So stay tuned and we'll be right back, everybody, with more talking about running for my life. And here we go.
My birthday is next Sunday, I think. So this is my last radio show as a 12-year-old and I'm turning 13 next week.
Hey there, folks. Join me for a musical trip along Americana Avenue. Now on Wednesday evenings from 6 to 8 p.m. Hear the greatest progressive songwriters from yesterday and today. Each week, I'll feature a specific artist and a vinyl spin of the week. It's music that plays to the human condition. Wednesdays at 6 on Thin Air Community Radio. Yeah,
yeah. KYRS exists because of the support of the public. We thank you for giving a little back with sustaining monthly support to continue independent music, local interest, and progressive news programming that is refreshing, engaging, and helps expand perspectives. Just text Give KYRS to 44321 and help keep KYRS on the air.
This is your KYRS live and local calendar for October 7th through the 10th. Monday, open mic at the Red Room, the Imagine Jazz Collective with Kevin Woods and Jared Hall at the Bad Seed, Mexican Coke, Fentanyl, Asbestos, and Psychic Death at the Big Dipper, and open mic at Live Entertainment. Monday and Tuesday, open jam at Jackson Street. Tuesday, Ken Peplowski with the Hot Club of Spokane, Zonky Jazz Band, and the Red Hot Kitten Stompers at Hamilton Studio, Jason Evans at Zola, Ron Green at the Osprey, and Carbon Leaf at the District. Wednesday, Don Hawkins at Zola, the Ronaldos at the Osprey, MS Paint, Destiny Bond, and the Mall at the Big Dipper, open mic with Derek Hart at the Checkerboard, and open jam at the Red Room. Thursday, Villa Blues and Jazz at Emmerou's, the Peplowski Project at J-Bone's Musicland, Slothy, Trizzle, and Ricochet at the Red Room, Jade Bird at the District, and Sunblood Story, Dirt Russell, Itchy Kitty, and Gatu Gatu at the Chameleon. For an entire hour of local musicians, tune into Sounds of Spokane every Sunday night at 8 on KYRS.
The Skate Park Project, formerly the Tony Hawk Foundation, is a skateboarding organization that helps communities build public skate parks for youth in underserved communities. To date, nearly 600 recipients of the Skate Park Project, Skate Park Project grants have opened their skate parks. These parks receive more than 6 million visits annually by youth who benefit from active lifestyle and camaraderie their facilities promote. Information online at skatepark.org. Out and About receives support from Boots Bakery and Lounge, specializing in vegan bistro fare and gluten-free baked goods. Located in the Saranac Commons, 19 West Main Street. Open 7 a.m. through 7 p.m., Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. through 5 p.m., Sundays. Full menu and information at bootsbakery.com. Welcome back, everybody. I am talking to my friend Eve Lupert and Marilyn Langbin.
Who is also your friend.
And my friend as well.
Yeah.
And we are talking about the production of Running for My Life, which Marilyn originally did, and we did a Spokane version of that. And Marilyn had a great question for Eve before the break of what was that like for you to kind of experience the trauma that these women went through in Congress?
It's fascinating. Shockingly, I was a history major. I don't know why, other than the advisor was cute. I'm obsessed with stuff. I remember the most important assignment I had in college was to write a paper interviewing people in World War II. And I thought, well, that's history. Well, my father fought in World War II. My best friend's mother was in Paris during the occupation. So it gave me this connection into history, and I've thought, what are those things, like my mother saying where they heard that Hitler invaded Poland and those kinds of things. What are those things in my life that ties me in to real history, that it's real? Yeah. And certainly my first would be the assassination of Kennedy. But yep. Then it would be the Challenger. It would be September 11th. And it would certainly be January 6th.
Yeah.
Certainly be one of those moments where you're connected to something that will go long past that day. And yeah. And it felt that way. And to play it made it it made it about human beings being vulnerable, not a big building that got its window smashed in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, like, to me, it was just revealing that when, you know, Trump was in office, all the people that came out and were felt like it's perfectly okay to be awful, that this was kind of their last big party, that to remind us we're here and we're awful and we're deluded, you know, and I don't know.
Marilyn, and you need to pay attention to us.
Yeah, yeah. We need to know that they're there. We just wish that their votes didn't count the same, count more actually than other people's votes, the way our democracy is set up. But that's a long, long discussion on that one. Marilyn, when you did this live version, were there things that you kind of discovered more as you went deeper into the text and saw the performances and worked with the actors?
The thing that was very different the second time around was being able to create more of a sense of urgency around what was going on in a way that you really can't when you're on Zoom because of people coming on and off camera and all of the various things that are driven by technology. So that was fascinating, watching the way good actors will pick up cues and build on the energy of what the person before them said in order to drive the narrative forward. And then again, the ability to hear the audience response was just added a whole layer to it that I hadn't really appreciated would be there. I had a sense of a couple of things that were said that were going to be said that would probably get some kind of reaction, but I wasn't as prepared as I thought I was for looking out in the audience and seeing people wiping their eyes and people shaking their heads and people just, you could see to a certain extent them living the trauma right along with the people that were reading it. It was a remarkable experience.
Oh, how wonderful. Yeah. Other places do it? Did other communities or people that you know do not yet,
but I have been approached by some educators in the community college system in the Bay Area that want to use it as a teaching tool in their classrooms, which I think is a fabulous thing.
Because you have a YouTube video of that too, correct?
Yeah, we did. We Zoom recorded.
Okay.
I think the last one, and so that's standing in.
Okay, so that's the one that's standing. Okay.
Nothing like the video work that you and I have to give a shout out to Pam Kingsley.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
She took the challenge and just ran with it, and yeah. I'm so grateful to her for doing that, and for you and she and Eve for spearheading this thing through so that the Spokane community could experience it too.
Well, and it is a heavy thing, you know. I mean, when you're in the, you know, editing the video and you keep watching the same thing over and over again, and it just kind of like getting hit with this same reality over and over again of well, you know, I think our country has changed. And I suppose, do you think now when you did this, you know, Biden had won the presidency, he was in office. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, we're poised at, and which I think now it's like, come on, people, you know, you've seen it. You've seen what this is about. You know, would you really vote for this guy again? It has to have been more of, I mean, not just having the live actors there, but also just the time of when you're doing it right now on the verge of the election.
Well, and that was part of what drove the date that we chose, because Sunday was the day before voting begins in the state of California.
Okay.
So all of our ballots landed yesterday.
Okay.
And to the extent that we were able to encourage people to vote early or have some impact on neighbors that may or may not be certain about how they wanted to vote, that was the reason for the timing there. I will acknowledge that, you know, living here in the Bay Area, I am in something of a bubble. And so I try to be mindful of that in conversations about things that have to do with the election, because it's not, I don't want to ever assume that anybody thinks the way I do. Go ahead.
I was going to say, we're not in that bubble. And it's part of the reason why it felt so important to participate and get this out into our community. I think it's amazing how people have forgotten that it happened. And there's been so much noise and so much nonsense, as well as some pretty serious things, that I think it's just way too easy for us to forget what the person in that chair can do and how they can take away all of your rights. And certainly as a woman, you know, looking at what's happening with choice, there's a lot at stake, obviously. And I just felt like showing this and sharing this right now, I think a lot of people, women in particular, got a chance to say, oh, yeah, that's who he is. That's who he really is.
I wish, and I think I know I told Pam this, and I think I told Eve this. I wish there was a way to have somebody who took part in the insurrection see a production of this, you know, just to kind of, I just don't know. I don't know how to go about changing people's hearts on this kind of thing. Somebody who would do that, because, you know, the internet lives forever. So as I'm putting up these pictures that I got from the January 6th commission and footage, I'm like, you know, these people who are in here, they're in so deep. There's really no way. It would take a tremendous amount of courage to be able to kind of turn back from this. And this may be the first time, you know, in our history where things just live forever. So I would love to do that. You know, that would be cool. Maybe as part of their sentencing, I don't know. But yeah, and so it's interesting because, you know, as your production and our production and all that, I think there is kind of this new, we're coming into kind of a new age of media, I sort of think. And I think theater is certainly going to be a big part of that.
I hope so. I'm curious to know about the choice that you all made to make a video of it instead of a live presentation. Because that was something that you all chose to do, which I think is great. And I also, having started to go down that path initially, I also know how much work it is. So that's why I abandoned it as a video project for myself, simply because I didn't have the skills to do that. And it was in the middle of COVID, so there was nobody I could reach out to.
Yeah.
To do that. But I'm just curious, was there something that led you as a group to want to do it on video rather than doing it as a live performance?
Well, I think we had talked about at one point doing it live, and then we also talked about having the video as part of like a live presentation of the video itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started talking about venues and security concerns and things like that. And so we kind of backed off from that. So I think, was that kind of it, E?
Yeah, I think, I'd like to officially say that I don't agree, but I think we became concerned about, again, living in the area that we live in, that there could be security issues, and where could we do this where we felt safe to do it.
Because
It's a volatile little universe.
And there was something kind of cool about having, you know, in some ways, you know, having to deal with people, some people doing it landscape, some people doing it portrait, different levels of lighting and sound that you have to go in and fix a little bit. that made it more difficult. But there is something about people doing it in their own homes too, you know, mm-hmm. that to me, I got like the feeling like somebody's doing this from their comfortable home, you know, where they're safe, you know,
right.
and what that Liberty Apprentice, that was the only thing.
Oh yeah.
You know, and he, yeah, the economy, let's talk. And he did the same thing to our economy because he doesn't know what he's doing. And
he doesn't pay the bills to small businesses, having yeah. worked with two companies that he stiffed.
Yeah. And towns that he's done rallies in, he's stiffed yeah. them as well.
Yeah.
Hey, okay, you're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1, 92.3. My guest today was Eve Lupert, and I'm so sorry, Marilyn Langbin, I lost you on the phone. I don't know what happened. I didn't touch any buttons, but you just disappeared, and I'm sorry because I wanted to talk to you some more. Maybe we'll talk more about other stuff as we... you know, as the year goes on. I won't be here next week, but I will have a special encore episode. And what else was I going to tell you?
I want to thank the women who participated.
Yes,
boy,
thank
they
you.
Were terrific to do this. They didn't know what it was, what we were going to do with it, and they just,
yes,
you know, agreed. I thought it was terrific.
I did too. And you can stay, you know, you can tune in here to KYRS and hear this on Thursdays and Sundays at 1 p.m. is when these episodes, these six episodes, are going to air. Or you can go directly to runningformylifespokane.com, and that will take you right to a page that has audio and video. And so you can, you know, whatever you want to do. All right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Eve, so much for being with me.
Thanks for all you did on this.
Oh, well, thank you for all you did. And I think we did. I think we did a good job.
Thank you, Pam.
All right. Yes. And thank you, Marilyn, so much for getting the ball rolling. And you know, I'm sorry we lost you out there. Okay. You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, joining our programming, probably going on right now.
Food giants and grocery chains. The partisans piled on Harris, sputtering like old Joe McCarthy that she was pushing Soviet-style government price-setting. Of course, these latter-day McCarthyites were either lying, ignorant, or both. Far from promoting price-setting, Harris was blasting price-gouging. Big difference. The ugly truth is that most public officials have quietly been pro-gouging for decades. By refusing to enforce antitrust laws, they've helped conglomerated food giants steadily amass monopoly power over the production, processing, and marketing of food in nearly every American community. Big brand names then use that brute force to crush independent competitors, cheat customers, and consolidate even more power for themselves. That is illegal. We have national laws like the 1936 Robinson-Patman Act that prohibit corporations from rigging the rules to control markets and rip off consumers. But since unlimited corporate campaign donations have flooded into our elections, monopolists have essentially bought off officials in both parties who now ignore antitrust law, rebranding such market thuggery as free enterprise efficiency. Thus, local and state governments hand out millions of our tax dollars to subsidize big-name food giants, all in the name of consumers and competition. No one mentions that these public giveaways provide the monopolistic market clout that allows the national outfits to clobber independent businesses, shrivel local competition, and voila, gouge consumers. This is Jim Hightower saying, so Harris is right to call out grocery gouging and to push stronger actions to stop it. But action number one is to enforce the anti-monopoly laws already on the books. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you subscribers to Jim Hightower's Lowdown on Substack. Find us at jimhightower.substack.com.
You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane at 88.1 and 92.3 FM.
KYRS Medical Lake and K222BG Dartford, 88.1 FM and 92.3 FM, Thin Air Community Radio. The following program was pre-recorded.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The occupied territories are segregated. The jure is segregated. It's not, you know, hard to understand. There are different signs for where different people can go. There are different license plates forbidding different people from going different places. Now, what the authorities will tell you is that this is a security measure. But if you go back to the history of Jim Crow in this country, they would tell you the exact same thing.
As Israel's slaughter in Gaza enters its second year, and as Israel sends more troops into Lebanon, we speak to the prize-winning author and journalist, Ta-Nehisi Coates, about his new book, The Message, based in part on a trip he took last year.